on this episode of the Cooligans. Oh, it's a good one. We talk about Inter Miami going to Cleveland. Why? Because that's where Columbus also went. It's two away teams. What a crazy match. We also talk a little bit about Portland and LAFC. What a crazy game. Phil Neville, is he a legend? We talk about it all.
And Brad Stuver of Austin FC, goalkeeper of Austin FC, is going to be joining us today as well to talk about the season and just a little and catching mice. You know how it is. And then also Manchester United. We have to talk about that ridiculous game and what do Manchester United fans have to look forward to. So all this and more today on the Cooligans. R.I.P. to the Pope, bro.
R.I.P. I thought you said, all right, pizza the Pope. Pizza. I thought that's what you just said right now.
No, we I woke up this morning and I saw the news. We usually...
Do we have a button for someone passing?
For Pope's passing away? Yeah. I don't know. I'm sorry. We don't have anything on the soundboard.
Do we have smoke? Should we release smoke? What happens?
No, man. I only mentioned this because as far as, I think the standard that we have for popes nowadays is fairly low. They're supposed to espouse the kindness and generosity and goodwill that human beings are capable of.
You would imagine that they are the best representation of the religion.
The religion, of just even of people in general. You would hope.
No, people. I mean, then you wouldn't need a pope if everybody was kind and generous.
But, you know.
You need something to remind you of what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, historically, Catholicism has gotten into a little bit of problems. It's been a little problematic.
Catholicism?
But this Pope, for whatever reason, just felt a little bit different. Showed a lot of kindness and love to the poor, to the LGBT, to show
atheists,
everybody, people.
How about this? Soccer fans.
He was a big San Lorenzo fan in Argentina. And so even just.
Or Los Cantantes.
Oh, I don't know.
It was, one of the two.
Mark Anthony.
Yeah. It was a big Hector Lavoe guy.
So the news is obviously a bit of a shock because he was dealing with a lot of health issues. He was dealing with pneumonia for a few months. But then he gets a visit from our vice president, J.D. Vance.
Yeah.
And the last meeting that he has with a public figure is the vice president. Right. And now he's gone.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not here to do any...
If you have red string, feel free to attach it to the picture of J.D. Vance.
It's just not a good look.
It's not a good look.
If I shake hands with the Pope and he dies the next day...
Do me a favor. Point to one good look J.D. Vance has had.
I can't... I'm blind all of a sudden. Yeah.
Is the good look in the room with us?
So, if I shake hands with the Pope and he dies a few hours later... Yeah. You gotta start at the very least.
If you did that with like let's say you're single in this scenario, you meet a new lady and she brings you home to meet her family, and you pet the family dog, and the dog dies, you're not getting a second date. You know what I mean? You're not getting a follow up date today.
Right, because
bad juju.
At the very least, even if nobody's gonna, they can't pin the death on you.
But they said the dog knew something. The dog knew something.
But we gotta, we've known the dog longer.
We gotta pick this side.
So R.I.P. I mean, sometimes it feels like a big old, we're talking about the smoke, which we all know that the Vatican stole from Austin FC when they announced a new signing.
We didn't want to be conspiracy theorists.
But we all know. Austin FC did it first. Okay?
Vatican City is like, yo, what they doing out in MLS, bro? So, you want to hear some great? You know the conspiracy theory that this is the last pope?
No, I didn't.
That there's some catacomb or something where they have squares for all of the popes to be put in. And this was the last square available.
Oh, wow.
And there's some old book where they talk about whatever, and they said that this... The Pope that, I forget what number he is.
The old book being the Bible?
No, it's not the Bible. It's an old book.
Is there an older book?
Yeah. Well, yes, there's many older books, actually. The Bible's comprised of books, by the way. But it's a book that said this would be the last Pope.
Interesting.
And then apparently some Armageddon or something happens after. What are the odds JD Vance is attached to that, huh?
Well, can't wait. As we're waiting for the Armageddon, we might as well just talk a little bit of footy.
Yeah, let's go.
That's what we're here for. Welcome to the Cooligans, everybody. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
We got a hot show today. We are going to be joined a little bit later by goalkeeper of Austin FC, the one and only Brad Stuver. We'll be
what
hanging
out. Gem this human is.
Brad is the best. I mean, you know, we've had lots of goalkeepers come through on this show, and so we have. There's some
reading his accomplishments is like, you know, the kid who did like a bunch of good stuff in school.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And they got like a bunch of extra credit, and they like did charitable stuff. And at the end of the year, they go through all like the and this person. That's kind of like reading Brad Stewart's like, yeah, why are you always doing good stuff?
Sure, I mean, I guess
you were probably the student. Yeah. I could tell. I could feel the vibes. Everyone, salute Emmy.
Emmy's here because Carter
got jury duty.
Got jury duty.
Poor Carter.
He's on the Mangione trial.
Yo. Just free man, free Luigi hat. Yo, you ain't got to go. You got to sit on no trials, dog.
Hilarious.
Did I ever tell you the story? I went to a federal. I had federal jury duty. Because I just didn't go to regular jury duty for a while. I had federal jury duty. They made the mistake of my wife and I went at the same. They booked us for the same one, which you're not supposed to do. They booked us on the same day. So we got there and we're like, oh, what are you going to do? Tell us one of us no.
Okay.
And they were like, all right, well, you have to sit in. So we both sat in and there was a guy next to us wearing a DEA jacket, an FBI hat. And he was holding up like, imagine holding up like a book over your heart. Like you know what I mean? Like for the listeners, it was Ann Coulter's book. He walked around everywhere like that. And I said, bro, you don't want to sit on any trial. We had a bathroom break. He's like, I got to get the F out of here, bro. He's like, I don't want to be on any trial. He's like, I bought the hat on the street. I borrowed the jacket from a friend and I'm returning this book later today. And I was like, my G.
It's like wearing a MAGA hat and a rainbow flag.
Hey,
I'm
gonna piss all y'all off.
I'm right or wrong whatever the case is.
100%. Depending on what they do, I'm gonna either take this hat off or this jacket off.
So Brad Stuver will be joining us in a little bit. He's one of the best.
Wait to hear. It's a
good
exactly.
Interview. Okay. Let's get to it. Let's start today with a little weekend recap of Major League Soccer because
we're gonna talk Columbus, Miami.
Yeah, we have to start there because
this was a big matchup, right?
The Columbus Crew of Cleveland.
Sorry, the Cleveland Crew.
The Cleveland Crew of Columbus.
But still impressive, though. I mean, this is massive for... Think about Columbus Crew a couple years ago. We're moving to Austin. They needed to get saved. And now they're playing 60,000 seats in Ohio State's?
No. Ohio State's is in,
oh, this is
in Columbus.
Brown.
The Cleveland Browns.
Cleveland Browns.
Which that's the only confusion I have is that maybe Ohio State's field is not enough for like the dimensions of a soccer.
It's even bigger.
So I don't understand why play this game in Cleveland. I'm sure somebody will let us know why they chose there. But there's also, you know, during the broadcast, they were kind of mentioning like that the Crew are essentially trying to grow their brand throughout Ohio. They have to obviously compete with Cincinnati, but Cincinnati is Southern Ohio and arguably Kentucky as well.
Yeah, it's the rich people. Like a lot of the Cincinnati Bengals players lived in Lexington, Kentucky.
Okay, yeah.
Right across the bridge.
So, and I know Ohio quite well. I know Cincinnati. I know Columbus. And I know Cleveland.
You rode your bike.
I rode a bicycle.
I've performed in all these cities.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, there's no bridge in Cleveland. Right across the water. It's just water.
Right. So, I rode a bicycle from Cincinnati to Cleveland and doing stand-up shows throughout the state.
And also icing your taint.
Icing my taint was definitely that was why I went.
That's why you stopped to do the show. You said, "Well, I'm here."
So it's a 2-hour drive. You know, in a automobile,
right.
From Columbus to Cleveland,
which is further than here to Philly.
I mean,
here to Philly is about an hour and a half
with traffic. Yeah, there might be. You're not getting from here to Philly in 90 minutes with no traffic.
I'm gonna do it in Google
traffic.
Maps. It's gonna tell me traffic.
I'm gonna say 2 hours, but
pick a place in Philly,
Philadelphia. Literally don't Philadelphia. Just say
middle of Philadelphia. Pick a place.
Reading Terminal Market.
Reading Terminal. Thank you.
We've been lovely place. I love Reading Terminal
Market. What's your favorite thing in Reading Terminal Market now that we're talking about it?
Beeler's Donuts. They're the best.
Oh. That's a, what a random. Okay. Most people would say the Knicks. Look at you.
All right.
To drive with current traffic, hour and 41 minutes.
Wow.
So that's closer to an hour and a half than it is to 2 hours.
All right. Well, you win this time, Alexis. So, but all right. Inter Miami win this game 1-0. And really the talking point out of this game is, I feel like we're talking about this every single week, is how do Miami keep getting away with this? They are, they give up tons of chances again. And the Columbus Crew and new signing Daniel Gazdag, who is here to, he's happy to play for a team that is competing for championships and out to win titles.
Are they with you there, though?
Apparently, he was still wearing a Philadelphia Union jersey under his Crew shirt. And how many opportunities does he need that he could put away, at least tie the game, potentially even win? And you know, nobody finishes their chances. It was kind of comical of the almost slapsticky of like Inter Miami make the mistakes that you expect them to make because they play with such attacking football.
It's such last gasp defending, which, look, I walk away from this saying Columbus played better, but also Miami continued to find a way to win. Like, we should probably have the conversation of, is it too early to say Mascherano was actually a good hire? Is it still too early?
I guess, I mean, they haven't lost. So you can't really...
But is it still too early? Is the question.
Are
you willing to say that he was a good hire? I don't think it's worse than what we saw last year.
Has anyone said that he was a good hire? It's his first professional...
Well, I think that's the thing. I don't think anyone has said he's a good hire.
Okay. Are you suggesting that people should be saying that?
I'm asking the question, should we be starting to say that now? It always feels like there's going to be an asterisk on when we talk about Miami because everyone feels like... We're saying for now, because I think we're all expecting that this style of play, this style of defending is going to catch up to them at some point.
Right.
There's no way to know that.
Yeah.
So what we know about MLS, though, is that it's whoever catches momentum towards the end of the season. I don't think anyone's told Mascherano that. They are leaving it all on the pitch every match. It's like way too early to be doing that.
Yeah. I'd say
this. Which is crazy. If you're listening to this and you're not MLS fan, you're thinking, that's the most insane thing to say about a soccer team.
They're like the worst looking unbeaten team I think I've ever seen. That's basically.
Are they bad looking or is it going to plan?
No. I mean, look, so I'll say that. I personally prefer Tata Martino's Inter Miami to Mascherano's because I think it's partly the coaching, it's partly the players that left. I thought losing Leo Campana, uh-huh, it changed the team, looks a little bit different. And you know, even if like Luis Suarez has to play more, he started almost every game. Yeah. When you sub. Like Suarez is getting subbed way later in matches than he usually was because you had a competent striker up again, top that could also contribute.
Too
and
early
score
in
goals.
The season to be playing him this many minutes.
Yeah,
people say his knees are 38. His knees are 75.
They've been through quite a bit.
Oh my
so,
God.
I'll say this: Inter Miami, as exciting as the team has been in this season, they were more fun to watch last season. I think they were more composed. They controlled the game a little bit more.
I think it depends on what style of football you like. I think you can make an argument that this is more exciting because you really don't know what's going to happen.
There's a sword hanging up
edge
over
of
there.
Your seat, bro. You want a high line with no safety net.
It's frustrating though. You watch any other team play against. I mean, you're just like, why can't you just
shoot it on frame?
Shoot it on frame.
No one's asking too much.
It is surreal that they've gotten this far. I mean, look, they.
Do you think teams will figure them out as the season goes? Because I think the one thing you brought up is Tata Martino's style. I think the one thing you would immediately say about Tata Martino versus Mascherano is that Mascherano is nowhere near the tactician that Tata Martino is. So I don't know if there's a plan B and C with Mascherano's style. Clearly there's a plan B because I don't think they've played the exact same way the entire season. But I don't know if he's like, oh, they're doing this, we need to do this. You understand what I'm saying? I don't know if he's the tactician. I don't know if he's the mastermind. I don't know if he's playing chess as much as he's playing checkers while holding brass knuckles with his other hand.
He is very
more of an inspirational manager.
Because he's fairly young. I mean, when did he stop playing? Has it even been 10 years? Yeah. Been 10 years, I think. So he still, I think, has a good connection with the players. And you see him on the sideline and the passion that he shows.
He's also really good with younger players because he's been managing the youth levels for Argentina. Not to a lot of success, but he's been doing it.
Yeah. Overall, though, he's going to get found out at some point. And I think there's been a little bit of luck that they haven't even lost the game or even got blown out in game. This game against Columbus
should have been 4-1.
Guys had two phenomenal chances. Yeah. And again, Ustari makes some great saves and stuff like that. But still, the shot from Arfston I think, credit has to go to Ustari a little bit because he keeps them in games. And then there's a little bit of conversation like, should Drake Callender be starting? Or do you give this 38-year-old goalkeeper, you continue to give him opportunity? Because for some reason, it's not even that he's making necessarily wild stops. It's like the when he's on the pitch, the opposing team hits the ball at him all the time when they have opportunities to go to either side of him. So you got to give some credit there.
I wonder if it's a positioning thing.
For a goalkeeper.
What if he's just smarter at positioning than Drake Callender?
The shot from Arfston, there was a little, you can see the intelligence there because I think most goalkeepers, a ball is coming into the box like that, go down. Like you would expect a shot to go down, but it did take a bounce and he just knew Arfston was going to try to chip him. And for a goalkeeper to not instinctually get to the ground or get low says a lot about, he's been around the block. He's been around the box a couple times.
I've seen this already.
Okay. Young buck. Yeah. You're not going to trick me.
You ain't going to fool me.
So I know it's a frustrating result for Columbus because they were better.
Yeah.
They have better chances. I think the XG was almost 4.
It's crazy.
And then to lose.
You saw Will Fernandez with his hands on his head running up and down the sideline.
Why'd I sign this fool? Yeah.
Who the hell is this guy?
Daniel who?
I mean, it is a drop down from Cucho, right? I mean, this isn't a like-for-like exchange.
Yeah, I mean, and Gazdag is not...
Cucho is a Premier League level. Gazdag is really, really good in MLS. And is that good enough to carry the mantle?
But Gazdag is a 10. And sure. Not a 9.
I mean, you're expecting him to score goals, is what I'm saying.
To score those goals and to give a better opportunity, even in the...
Or at the least, make it so that they have to be saved. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Fished out of the river.
It's ridiculous. I mean, you see when your whole bench gets up after a chance and they literally can't believe it because they...
NBA playoff bench jump up.
Yeah, there was Steven Moreira who gets up and you see he's about to celebrate a goal and then he's like, what was that? So those moments are, they say a lot about what the expectations are, especially on a chance like that. So
I also think it shows that, which is ridiculous to say, but how much Columbus wants to prove that they are also one of the top tier in MLS, as opposed to, the fanfare around Miami. And I also think there's a little bit of ego in play when some of these teams in their own markets go play in bigger stadiums or 2 hours outside your home market. I think there's a little bit of ego in play of like, okay, if we normally get 20 and now we have 40,000 new people coming to see us, we're going to show you we're the reason to come watch, not Messi.
Right.
And to not be able to, at least fulfill that or put that together. It's got to be frustrating.
Well, yeah, a lot of people in pink jerseys out in the stadium were quite happy.
Yeah, but we were in New York City when there was a lot of people in pink jerseys rooting for New York for New York City FC at the end of that game.
Yeah. Let's move on to Portland against LAFC. So a couple of big moments here with
nothing controversial happened here.
Well, Olivier Giroud gets his first goal in MLS. I think,
how insane is that?
Yeah, I believe he only scored in Leagues Cup and I think in Champions Cup, if I'm not mistaken. But the Giroud gets his first goal and it happens to be a free kick. And honestly, He's had way easier chances than this.
Oh, 100%.
And for him to make... Is Giroud left-footed? Naturally left-footed?
That's actually a great question.
I assume he is because he took it with his left foot.
I remember playing with both feet at Arsenal. But
he is left-footed.
Thank you. Well, so, which is, it's, I always love
he
when I don't
didn't
know.
Take free kicks.
I've been seeing, so the comments under the free kick are basically a lot of, like, I assume people in Europe or whatever that are like, first of all, some are like, great goal. Some are like, why is Giroud taking free kicks in MLS? Like, that it's an insult to other MLS players that this European player, this French player, comes to MLS and now is taking the free kicks. And he's never, I don't even know when he's ever taken a free kick.
I don't remember him doing that at Montpellier. I don't remember him doing it at Arsenal. I don't remember him doing it at Chelsea.
I guess he should have.
He definitely
been.
Didn't do it in France.
The free kicks to me are something, it doesn't matter what league you're in. There's no
standard.
There's no standard. Yeah, like, if you can make it, you get it over the wall and then under the bar. That's it. Doesn't matter who you're facing.
And MLS goalkeeping is really good. It's not like all of a sudden. It's like these guys aren't turned around looking the other way.
Exactly. And the goalkeeper is rightly covering the far post. The wall is supposed to do its job. The ball is set right at the edge of the D at the top of the box. Right. So you're not supposed to get this ball over the wall.
It should, the wall should jump and it should be too close for you to be able to get it over and on frame.
And it was pretty remarkable. Yeah. I mean, I don't think people...
This is clangs off the goalpost.
Twice. Which is
or the crossbar.
Which is a nice satisfying thing. So, because a lot of times it hits the crossbar and then it'll be sort of on the edge. You don't know if it goes in or not, but this clearly goes in. Hits the crossbar again and goes in again.
Yeah. Counted for twice. Counted for two, dude.
It should be a twofer.
He celebrates by falling to his knees and looking up to the skies, which is finally I scored an MLS. I think that's what that goal song
was. It was a little, thank you, Don Garber.
Yeah, oh my God. You see? Worth the millions.
So the controversy here, it was an entertaining game, but the controversy here was after, during the game, Steve Cherundolo gets sent off for screaming at the ref.
So the ref gives a LAFC player a yellow, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
Cherundolo is yelling. We can't hear what he's saying.
We don't
know. But the ref looks at him like, excuse me?
Well, you must have said something.
And then walked right over to him and immediately showed him a red and was like, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, I told you, not to the end of the season. We're going to Germany.
And look, we, you know, Cherundolo's our guy. We spent a weekend with him out in Germany.
Right. It was part of a Bundesliga trip. It just sounds like Steve Cherundolo just invited the Cooligans out.
No,
come
bro.
Be with the fam.
we stayed at his house.
Yeah.
We hung out with Steve Cherundolo, you know, fans of the show that have been following us for a couple of years. We went to Frankfurt and we went to Dusseldorf.
Right. Him being a Hanover legend.
Yes.
He was sort of like the ambassador.
Yeah, he was like almost our chaperone.
Right.
We asked him all the important questions. You asked him about...
We had some tactic ideas.
Yes.
You know, you had some ideas. And he had talked about, he was a defender, but he wanted to be a coach at the time. He was talking about being a head coach. I was like, oh, you're going to be one of those boring head coaches, right? Because you're a defender. And he said, no. And he talked about playing the style. I said, I got some ideas for you. You were a defender. What if a defender had an erection for all 90 minutes?
Yeah.
Would that not be distracting to the striker? And you were like, this is ridiculous. Why would you ask that? When I posed this question to you, I posed it to him and he goes, okay, well, let's think about it. And I said, now this is my type of head coach.
He is open to ideas, to conversations, to brainstorming.
He's like, yo, the only bad idea is the one you don't say aloud.
Okay. So,
but his idea was, I don't know if there's that much blood in that part of the body that you'd be able to do the rest of the job.
So, yeah. He, you know, bringing too much facts and reality to Alexis's brilliant ideas. But no, so we have an affinity for Steve Cherundolo. So obviously it sucks to see him get sent off. But Phil Neville, I thought his post-game comments were going to be about the foul in the box because Bwanga gets fouled by Diego Chará. And no, he was upset with...
Yeah, he did foul him.
He did foul him, yeah. So you just assumed that, you know, they had the lead and... there's a late penalty and, you know, you would normally assume that that's what it would be about. But no, he was upset at the referee and the way everything was handled. So I've never really seen this before, but let me just play his comments.
And we will get a report and they'll say that I was causing dissent. I was getting my players away from the officials. And Steve Cherundolo should never have been sent off on any game of football in the whole world. And what we're seeing now is that we've just played a 3-3 game against one of the best teams, an incredible advert of football. And I just think that they just want to be the kings of the castle. It's all about them. They just want to show that they are the main people in this league. And unfortunately, it's not good.
Okay. So,
you know what draws my attention first is the phrase, it was an incredible advert for football.
Yes.
What do you think about that? How does that make you feel?
I like, because look, he is
you don't get it doesn't feel a little condescending?
I don't take it that way.
I'm here to show you how football's played.
I understand how that could be interpreted that way. I don't take it that way. I take it as,
I don't
like,
know that I take it that way, but it does feel a little bit like that.
I would say so the reason I like that he said that is because he's not focusing on the play itself, like he's,
or the I should have won type.
Yeah,
of
yeah. He's not simply saying like
this
our
is
team
good for the whole. Yeah, I get that. I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah, so I think that's some sort of progress that we should applaud a little bit, because he is obviously, arguably, it, at least to Americans, he's like a very legendary English footballer. Obviously played at United, played for the English national team, been in really, really accomplished.
Yeah,
sure.
Legendary is a bit much, but accomplished, sure.
Sure. So him saying this, I think, is, I'm not necessarily looking to him for validation of MLS, but he is, there aren't too many English coaches, and they do come in to this league with their bias about MLS. And then a lot of times, realize like the league is actually unique in its own way, and it's interesting, and there's quality and stuff like that. But the comments themselves about the referees, I see this and I'm like, this is why we love this sport. There's mm-hmm. controversy, there's drama. Him, you know, and I'm not saying that referees should be targeted and attacked or whatever, but I think this is a fair
criticism.
Fair is not the, maybe fair. I think it's fair for him to criticize. I think he is. Just the idea of like they think they want to be the kings of the castle and run everything and stuff like that. I'm like, it just intrigues me. I'm like, damn, what the hell did these refs do exactly? Like, yeah. I mean, I understand they run a tight ship. So, and the fact that he's even like, they shouldn't have even sent off the other coach. He's like, he's trying to be as objective as possible. He's just like, this is not the level I'm expecting, and maybe there's a less tolerance for disrespect from the referees versus how it was in the Premier League or
in
England.
Yeah, this feels like when you watch those videos of people, like, this happens a lot in New York. I see a lot in New York. I don't think it's the only place, but like people yelling at cops.
Sure.
And they're like, yo, you just a civilian, bro. You know, you just a civilian with a gun. Yeah. This feels like that. You know what I mean? Where you're just like, ooh. Right. Yo, you want to be kings of the castle.
You're legally allowed to say it, I don't know, bro.
I don't want to be the one. I don't want y'all to know I said it. Because I don't want you to treat me different on that traffic stop.
There's something to it where I'm like, okay, I like that he's feisty like this. And
he's probably going to get fined, but this feels fair enough to say.
Yeah, yeah. He's just like,
this doesn't feel like a reason to fine somebody.
Weirdly enough, the referee, Guido Gonzalez, mm-hmm. was the same ref who we went to Charlotte for mm-hmm. Inter Miami against Charlotte at the end of last season or two seasons. I don't remember how long ago already it was, but when I was on my flight back to Newark, he was on the flight. And yeah. I was like, hey, you refed a good game, bro. Right. That was a good one. He stopped me and he was like, hey, thank you for saying that. Which it was one of those, nobody has ever said something nice to me.
No one ever says anything nice to me.
So I'm just saying, with Phil, I'm like, bro, that's my guy.
Yo, Phil, baby, what you doing?
Maybe some other refs, but this guy, he's a good ref.
What would you have said on the plane this time, Christian?
I it's interesting because, again, he's not really talking about anything on the field. He's really just talking about everything around the game and the yellow he received and the red that Chirundolo received. I think it's something, look, if this, every ref has their own way of reffing a game. I mean, we all know the rules, but then there's a little bit of like, yo, don't even think you could talk to me in any way where, you know, regardless of, some refs might be a little bit more sensitive to it than others. And maybe this was just a day he was just like, nah, bro. Like, all he says is Steve Chirundolo shouldn't have been sent off. But what did Steve say?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me know why he got sent off. Because the reaction from the ref was like, he said something about his mama.
You know what I mean? It was an immediate red. Yeah. So clearly he wasn't having any of it.
It is really interesting, though. The ideas of like these coaches are like battling when they're on the pitch side. But as soon as the game's over, it's like a little union of their own, you know? Like you hear about managers or coaches in Europe always going to dinner. You know what I mean? Like, the night before a big match, this coach will go out with this coach and they'll have dinner. They probably talk about like, this ref.
Of course.
You can't even sneeze in his direction. You get a red card. That's really interesting.
I mean, same thing. It's like when we hang out with players that I'm not on the show, like off the mic.
Easy now. Some photos have been released recently.
I'm just saying. When that happens.
When players know that there's nothing being recorded, it is a more human-like energy than when they are being
And I would
recorded.
Say players probably talk to us in a different tone than they would maybe if they were bump into a journalist or somebody from a club.
100%.
They're like, hey, my guys.
Yo, you see that bullshit last week? And you're like, yo, I knew it was bullshit. Yo, it's crazy.
I know you couldn't say that during the post-game press conference, but thank you for saying it
to me. Or sometimes we'll be like, yo, big win. You know, we'll see, especially like we're at All-Star or whatever. Hey, that was a big win the other week. And they're like, yo, we've been playing like ass. I'm like, you have, bro. We said on the show. It's like, it's crazy how with us, they'll let that go
exactly
a little bit.
So obviously we were mentioning Cheech Rundolo, but Cheech Rundolo did announce that he is parting ways with LAFC and
America.
And America, leaving at the end of the season. Which the shock here is mainly just that this is 8 games into the season and you're announcing that that you're leaving. And so the quote was from Toronto says, after much reflection and discussion with my family, we made the decision that at the end of this year, we will return to Germany, Toronto said in a statement.
Bro, not many people do LA to Germany. You know what I mean?
Long flight.
No. I mean, most people don't switch. Don't switch habitations. You know what I mean?
Do you
LA weather versus Germany, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Food.
Look, but you know, at this point, you know, Trundolo, I mean, when we were there hanging out with him, he is beloved by not even just in Hanover, like almost any city, people know who he is. He speaks German fluently. Beyond
his kids are probably more German than they are Southern California.
Probably. So the idea. My only issue with this is, look, Trundolo has had a few amazing moments as LAFC coach, right? I mean, playing in big, big games, obviously winning MLS Cup.
That's really all you have to say.
They've had, I mean, again, that game against the Philadelphia Union in the final, literally one of the greatest games in MLS history, and then also maybe in footballing history. Gareth Bale tying the game.
Subbing
in
Gareth Bale was insane.
It was just such an incredible moment. And the expectations are quite high at LAFC. They have really, really good players. They bring in high quality players. This also, you know, you start thinking about.
I still don't love the addition of Giroud on this team.
What are you going to do? I mean, it's like, you're not going to say no to Giroud. I think there's not many teams that would, if he wanted to go to that club, that, you know, that they would reject that.
But I think this is one of the issues in MLS is that players will be like, I want to go play there. And that team doesn't fit the way you play.
Yeah.
We saw this with Chicharito when he first got to LA Galaxy. They're sending in crosses to Chicharito, which is to head the ball, which is ridiculous.
I mean, he was able to do it at one point.
Yeah, but that's not where he was in his career.
Sure.
Look, that's not the way you play with Chicharito now.
It's something where Giroud in particular looks like when he was playing at Chelsea, when he was playing at he was at Chelsea for a little bit, but he was playing at Arsenal.
He won Champions League.
Yeah. When he was playing at Milan, even still, there was the quality of players around him was so high that they could hide his inefficiencies and
they could ask him to do
bit.
One thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
And he would
similar to Zlatan when he was at Milan or United.
Yeah.
You're older. You have one thing we're asking you to do.
Yeah.
Don't worry about anything.
And
else.
They're asking more of Giroud, and he can't do it. And you know, I hope it improves.
Again, Giroud on Charlotte would go crazy.
You think so?
But not just for the counterattack and when they're in the final third. They want to send the crosses in. You know what I mean?
Maybe. I mean, I think Charlotte are a little bit more dynamic need a faster Adjumayang. Adjumayang
is incredible. So I'm not saying to replace him with Giroud.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Tactically, he makes more sense there.
Maybe. I disagree there. I don't think Giroud would be better. But I think what we're seeing at LAFC is Giroud arguably kind of makes the teams worse. I mean, and it's not because of his quality. I think it's just his age and pace. And
the style of play doesn't fit his quality.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't move like he used to. So
it's like, all right, so you do the free kicks.
so it was good to see. Yeah,
I'm
but,
shocked that Shurundalo's leaving. But in particular, it says, after much reflection and discussion with my family, we made the decision to leave after this year and go back to Germany. It sounds like, you know, the whole family voted they don't want to be here no more.
Possibly. And
that's what it sounds like, because why would you say that?
So some people are suggesting
politics
of, like, you know, this administration and things like that. And we've sort of seen, you know, I sort of felt this way about Wayne Rooney.
Are the kids citizens?
They're American citizens. Yeah, his father. Yeah, if they went through the process, but you would assume so. But I sort of felt the same way about when Wayne Rooney announced that he was leaving. It felt very sudden, and it felt like a little bit of, like, maybe the family. I don't even know if the family was living here, or
I think they were supposed to. And then that whole back and forth, Rebecca Vardy's account.
Sure.
It seemed like at that time they moved back to London.
Okay, so
that's what it seemed like.
Yeah, so maybe that had something to do with it, and you can't blame it. I still think it is odd to announce that you're leaving, you know, in 8 months or something like that, whenever the season, or like 6 months when the season's over. So I wonder if that affects the team. Does it motivate them? I also think about, you know, maybe Antoine Griezmann, that was the rumor that he was going to go to LAFC, and then this announcement comes. And then, so maybe even Griezmann was like, maybe there's a little bit of disarray. Maybe I shouldn't go there. I don't know.
I don't know if that's tied together, but who knows?
Yeah. I'm just thinking about it. But
to me, it's just, I don't care so much about how early it is. I think Europeans do this all the time. I think we talked about it on the show, and there was a sort of that era in the Premier League where they were like, at the end of the season, you will no longer be our coach. So how you fire somebody in 6 months? That's crazy.
But are they going to be involved in, like,
I'd be stealing summer signings from the stadium every day? You know what I mean? It'd be crazy. So for me to see this doesn't really surprise me. What surprises me is the verbiage in the statement. Makes me feel like the family was like, hey, man, I don't want to be here no more.
Yeah. So,
and look, I think Germany is a wonderful place to live, but weather-wise, most Europeans dream of, like, weather like Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah.
Of living in that.
I wonder,
just the relaxed life of Los Angeles versus Germany. So to go back to Germany says a lot, unless there's a big opportunity for him to coach there.
So that's what it kind of feels like. I'm sure he's like getting his ducks in a row, but you would imagine I guess it wouldn't be in upcoming season, but maybe a coaching job in Bundesliga is, you know, clearly what he would probably want. So maybe there's an opportunity.
Maybe. Yeah. I will continue.
Bayer Leverkusen, you would imagine Xabi Alonso move on to Real Madrid with all the stuff about Ancelotti. Chirondolo? Is it crazy to think Chirondolo could be the
coach
over there? I don't know.
Or maybe he goes back to Hanover and tries to get them back up.
Maybe.
Look, at the end of the day, you know, and this is just the thoughts of Alexis Guerreros, but it must be tough to be a parent when you could live in a place that doesn't have active shooter drills in your school.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, maybe that's, again, just the thoughts of Alexis, not anyone else.
I mean, probably a lot of other people.
Maybe. Let us know in the chat. Hit the like button if you have a similar.
Last thing real quick before we get to the Stuver interview, we just got a RSL played against Toronto. Toronto gets their first win of the season. Toronto has been abysmal this season, but it's good to
today.
Until
this weekend.
But there's a red card given to Diego Luna. Diego Luna has been in all over social media because
he met Diego Luna from
the Star Wars franchise, from Andor, and from a bunch of other stuff.
To be honest, did not know he was a Star Wars guy.
He's in Andor, the new series.
I grew up with a kid named Andor. I did not know that was a Star Wars thing.
So and also he was in Star Wars Rogue One. Emmy, are you a Star Wars fan at all?
I am not.
Okay.
Emmy. Let's go.
But Star Wars Rogue One,
Emmy got some nerd stuff to her, but not this.
No, couldn't be me. Okay.
There's other. I'm sure there's some books in there that, you know.
But Star Wars Rogue One is one of the best Star Wars.
Can we get over
ever.
The Star Wars stuff?
I was trying to finish my sentence. That's
it's
all.
It's a soccer show.
But Diego Luna, the footballer, gets a red card. And it's honestly one of the most ridiculous calls. I mean, we're talking about referees and not being too harsh on them, but this is one of the most ridiculous calls I think I've ever seen. Who is number 28? I don't know who's basically drawing the foul.
But he drags Diego Luna down and then like locks
drags
his
him
feet.
Down, then locks his feet.
I guess I see it. It's that last little kick
it's
out.
It's a little. It's not. It's
nah. There's a kick out right there.
Right there. Okay, we're looking at it.
Turn. Look, he stomps and then that little
but
kick.
He. It's not a kick. It is a like.
Nah, if you watch it in real time.
It's so he's being his foot is being held right now. So he's trying to pull away.
Watch it in full speed, regular speed. Okay. There's a kick out.
Here we go. We're watching.
As ridiculous as it is, it's a tiny little kick out with his trailing foot. Watch. Right there.
It's
You saw it.
I wouldn't even call it a kick out.
It's a kick out.
I would call it like a jerking motion, like a quick reaction.
No, because it wasn't a pulling your foot out. It was a using. He used the player's leg for a little bit of momentum.
He scraped a little bit trying to get his leg out of there.
Look, here's what I'll say. It's not enough for me to have called it a red card or call it a red cardable offense. That said, if a red card was given, I saw the kick out, so I can't say take that back.
See, but if another referee is saying, hey, I think you made a mistake here.
But the VAR can't say you made a mistake. VAR could say, we see something different. You need to come look at the screen, right?
Right.
We suggest you look at the screen.
And it's just the wrong call. I mean, there's no...
I don't agree. I think because...
There has to be some
in
nuance.
In real time, there's not enough evidence to overturn it to say there wasn't a kick out. In real time, what? Just watch. In real time, you see his... You see, look,
but,
boom, you saw it.
But
you know what I'm talking
about. But
you're
not addressing the fact that he's holding onto his leg.
But the foot is free at that point. He doesn't need to do that extra motion. That extra motion was to inflict a little bit of pain.
So the holding of the leg forces him, his leg is,
no,
he twists, it twists his body because he can't move.
No. He does the extra kick out. He doesn't need to do that. He could have just pulled his leg out.
I don't know, man.
No, look, literally, right there.
It's kick out is such a strong word for what happened.
That's literally what happened, though.
No, I mean, I look. There clearly was contact, but it wasn't instigated by Diego Luna.
I agree with you. If someone is holding your foot, you have the right to get your foot out of there. But the moment you kick out, the moment you push on that player with the bottom of your foot, you've done something wrong.
Yeah. Look, don't agree. Let us know what you think in the comments because this is, to me, such a terrible
call. I think it's a soft red. I think it's stupid, but you had that little kick out. What are you going to do?
Whatever. But that's the game. It's interpreted in different ways.
To reiterate, the referee went and looked at it and still upheld the red.
Yes, again, I think is wrong because
me and the refs, we know what we're talking about.
Okay, Alexis is, he works for the cops, bro.
Yeah, man, I'm pro-ref, dude.
Okay.
I'm pro-pro.
All right, let's get to our conversation with Brad Stuver. Again, I think everybody's going to enjoy this a lot. He's just a great dude, great goalkeeper, and... we spoke to him on a couple days ago on Thursday. Mm-hmm. So this was before the game against LA Galaxy. And then he gets a clean sheet.
You're welcome.
Against LA Galaxy. So, I mean, you know, I guess.
Come on the show is, I think, what we're saying.
The cooling doesn't get 3 points as well. I think that's how
the cooling bump is crazy.
All right. So here's our conversation with Austin FC goalkeeper Brad Stuver.
We talk about the revolving door of guests.
Bro, and especially Austin FC guests. We had Danny Pereira on a couple weeks ago.
Scored his first goal of the season after being on our show.
I'm just saying.
Maybe it can happen with this guy. You never know.
Imagine he's.
We'd all be shocked. We'd all be pretty shocked.
If we have that kind of influence, I'd be like, yo, our magic is real.
Then let's get some Arsenal players on here before we play PSG. But, I mean, this guy, friend of ours.
Friend of ours, yes.
For many years.
Exactly. We crossed paths at his former club a couple years ago.
And now he's doing his thing over in Austin. We promised he'd be on the show. We love him and so do you. The starting goalkeeper for your Austin FC, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Stuver, everybody!
Stu! What's good, brother?
Well, that was quite an intro, fellas.
It's for you, you deserve it.
If I score a goal, I told my wife that I have to retire. So I'm hoping that I don't. I'm hoping to keep that magic alive.
Hilarious. Well, buddy, you can come in still.
It'll just be, hey, honey, it's only going to be one stream of income.
Yeah.
That's called my first goal. I'm done.
I can't get back on that pitch. I made a promise.
Brad, dude, this is, we were talking before we started recording. This is your first time on the Cooligans podcast.
Crazy.
And honestly, it is, I'm here to apologize to you because we have been fans of you for such a long time. Obviously, you were the backup goalkeeper.
On and off the pitch fans of yours.
100%. You were the backup goalkeeper for New York City FC. And New York City FC is obviously a club that's very important to us because it is the reason why the Cooligans exist, right? We started the show basically
in the
supporter section. Yeah. And then when you got to the club, you were a person. Yeah, maybe you weren't the starter, but you were an important figure to
A fan favorite.
Exactly. People really, really love it. People still talk about you out here. And now to finally have a long conversation. I know we've interacted a little bit with club related things and stuff like that, but one of the things that makes me really happy is that when you went to Austin FC, that love that you had gotten in New York was replicated immediately in Austin. Austin FC fans always speak so highly of you, and you're clearly so important to the team. But there is something to being the foundation, the heartbeat of that team. And so when moving to Austin and then seeing that love and support, not only for the team but for you in particular. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, leaving New York was difficult for me just because, I love the club. I love the guys that I was playing with. The fans were amazing. They welcomed me with open arms. And coming to Austin was a big risk for me. I wanted to become a starter. This was a chance for me to kind of compete a little bit more. Obviously, I knew the situation in New York going in, so Austin gave me kind of like a fresh start. And when I came here, I didn't know what it was going to look like. I didn't know what the fans were going to be like. I didn't know what the city was going to be like. And after coming here, being able to become the starter, just seeing the fans show up every game and just kind of what we've been building here over the last 5 years, it's been a really fun and really fun project. And I can say that I made the right decision leaving New York as hard as it was at the time.
I can imagine. And, you know, maybe was there a little trepidation, maybe a little fear, because you were so beloved as a backup, you could do no wrong. And then when you start, you're like, I may do wrong. You know what I mean? Were you ever like, this is kind of comfy right now?
Hey, I mean, there were some conversations going on when I was leaving, and I was talking to some guys and some people that wanted me to stay at the club. They were like, yeah, but what if it doesn't work out in Austin? Like, what if? Like, what if it doesn't work out? Like, here, you know, we love you here. Like, let's keep you here. But
bro, you can't fail if you don't start. You know what I mean?
The reviews are always positive.
Yeah. It was a risk I was willing to take at the time.
Yeah, I'm glad you did, man. This is what makes a competitor.
Yeah, but this is something, obviously, from your time at Major League Soccer. This is always something you really, really fought for, even when you were at the Crew. Now that you are in that spotlight, and you know, I know for professionals and competitors like you, you're not afraid of the moment or things like that. But just sometimes the not even just the spotlight, but the limelight, just the whether you make mistakes, whether you make incredible saves, like almost psychologically for a goalkeeper and who was battling to get that number one spot. Now that you have it. What's the emotional sort of toil like of like, oh, okay, now I am here and now I have so much more responsibility and a lot more eyes on me.
Yeah, I mean, goalkeepers are crazy, man. We
yes.
We're a little bit psychotic. So when I think about that, I just think about all of the years that I put in where I was grinding it out. I was just kind of waiting my time and I dreamed of the moment where I was going to be the starter. And now that I have it, I know that there are so many other people just like me in the situation that are trying to come take my job. So it just kind of like drives me to take full advantage of the situation that I'm in and don't take anything for granted. And just know that, if I know anything about myself, there are people like me, like coming after my job. So I have to be one step ahead of that curve. And, I've been waiting so long to become a starter that I'm not ever going to give it up.
Yeah. I mean, look, I just want to mention this because there's, you know, you are one of, we've had plenty of goalkeepers on this show and we've spoken to so many goalkeepers. And then it's easy when you say goalkeepers are crazy. We're like, yes, yeah. There's no humor to, no. We're not giggling about it. We're just like, yeah, we all agree.
There's no debate about that.
But you are one of the, you know, more endearing, kinder speaking and presentable goalkeepers. Some goalkeepers, we all understand you're crazy, but there's a difference.
Some of them know how to hide it in social situations. You're one of them.
That's right. I'm just very good at hiding that part.
I remember maybe like a year ago, I had seen a clip of Tim Howard talking about, he was talking to Ben Foster. He was on Ben Foster's podcast, right? So I love those goalkeeper conversations between each other. And there's a transparency that goalkeepers have with each other that they don't really show with other people. And Tim Howard was like,
goalkeeper union conversation. Goalkeeper.
So when he was saying that whenever he was benched and they had another goalkeeper, that he would hope that the goalkeeper gave up a lot of goals. He was like, yeah, I hope that goalkeeper gets pumped. That's what he said. I'm quoting him. And I'm like, all right, that's like the competitive nature.
The name on the back is more than the badge over the heart.
So
huh?
When you hear something like that, is that like, hey, come on, be a team guy.
Or do you kind of get it?
Or do you kind of get that?
Somewhere in the middle there. You know, sometimes you go into the game and you're like, man, I really hope the team wins, but I really hope this guy doesn't like have a like 10 save shutout and like put doubt into people's minds. But obviously, that's a little bit extreme. I hope this guy sucks. Like I've had really good relationships with like all of the goalkeeper groups that I've had, and like even like with the guys in New York, I love seeing Sean still doing his thing. I love seeing that Barraza is getting some minutes over in DC. So like those guys, like I'll always be like their biggest fans, and like even guys that are on my team, like they're gonna push me every day in training. I'm gonna push them every day in training. I want them to succeed. I just don't want them to succeed here.
Hey, no,
succeed, just not when it's against me. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. I wanna ask about I think one of the reasons why so many people fell in love with you, even if you weren't getting a lot of minutes or when you were doing the US Open Cup, it's because you and your wife, especially on social media, you're such good people. You help out communities. You try to do so much. Is it difficult to sort of do that in the moments where maybe competitively you want more or you're trying to start? Or is that just a part of your personality?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little bit more difficult just because you're putting a lot of focus and a lot of energy into kind of like what I do on a daily basis, like putting a lot of effort into trying to get better as a player, trying to be seen, trying to put yourself into a situation where you're going to be the consistent starter. But I mean, it doesn't get any easier once you're there. You're trying to keep it. And then, I mean, for us, it's just being part of the community is just human nature. I think everybody has that ability to just like become part of the community that you live in. And we've been lucky that we've lived in three amazing communities that have like all embraced us and like taught us about what it's like to be from Columbus, what it's like to be a New Yorker, what it's like to be from Austin. So I think it's cool. We've kind of dipped in and learned a lot about the places that we've lived.
Yeah. Every once in a while, when I'm walking down the street and I see someone holding a clipboard and it's on some like Save the Whales type thing, I picture the Stuver. You know what I mean? I'm like, what would the Stuvers do, you know? And I was like, it's not even enough to sign the clipboard. You guys would get in and physically save the whales by hand.
Well, I mean, Ashley doesn't swim that well, so I don't think she's diving in to save the whales.
Damn, look how much she's willing to sacrifice for them
whales. Yeah, I do want to – we can talk a little bit more because, you know, while you were in New York, you were doing the laundry project. Yep. Right. And which was basically doing laundry, raising funds and raising money and getting volunteers to do laundry for people on the underserved community. And it was it's something that we all sort of take for granted. Like laundry is an important part of just existing in any
community. I take it for granted. That's why I bought 40 pairs of underwear. I keep forgetting.
Well, some people don't have the luxury to be able to do that.
Yeah.
So, so when you were doing that in New York, and it was something that was just so, it inspired me too. Like it is something where I'm like, man, there's obviously you are already a professional footballer and there's so much going on in your life, but you sort of never shied away from that commitment to the community and just ingratiating yourself. And then also to do something where it's like, you know, you think about feeding the homeless. You think about there's certain things that when it comes to charity, but it's such a practical and important thing that so many people really, really genuinely appreciated. So I love that you brought it to Austin as well. And can you talk about the laundry project and the stuff with your foundation with the Brad and Ashley Stuver Foundation and everything going on when it comes to those charitable things that you're doing?
Yeah, we've been involved with the Laundry Project since 2016. We started in Columbus, and then we brought it to New York with us. Basically, it started in Tampa, and it's in probably, we've done projects in about 60 cities across the nation. We just fundraise money, fundraise laundry supplies, and then we go into neighborhoods that utilize public laundromats, lower income neighborhoods that like utilize it the most. And for 2 to 3 hours on project day, we just pay for anybody that walks through the door. We just held one this past week on Tuesday. It was National Laundry Day, and we did one location. I think we served about 60 families, did about 700 loads of laundry at one location. But like you said, it's one of those things that you just kind of take for granted. Like, I never really thought about it. I had never been to a public laundromat until I went to college. And like thinking about that as like just a daily chore that goes unnoticed and how much just clean clothes mean to everybody. It really resonated with us, and it was something that we wanted to take with us everywhere. And the platform that we have as professional athletes is just so big, and to be able to utilize that and just kind of spotlight things that are going on. Everyone thinks that they need to make these like big grand gestures, or they need to donate $1 million to like create change in the world. But what we've really seen is just little actions and little projects that happen like every day and happen consistently is kind of the best way to like go about and actually like help people. And the more you do it, the more people get involved, the more people see it, and it just kind of like snowballs. And people just find initiatives that they can resonate with, and they just keep doing it on their own.
Man, let me know the next community, because I got 40 pair of underwear that I got. Yeah, I'll pay for my own dryer. I'm not disrespectful.
I was going to say, we were doing it in New York there for a while. Even after I left, we had some people that were still doing it, but I think it was over in Brooklyn. It wasn't up in the Bronx.
Okay. Nice. But I also want to mention, you help out a ton. You've also recently helped exterminate across the northern border in Canada.
Oh, extermination. We set it free. It went free into the wild.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But you weren't scared to pick up that mouse, man?
I didn't even think about it, to be fair.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you were just like, the game has to go on.
Because I was like, if it was big enough, I was just going to pick it up by the tail and like walk it off the field. But it was like that big. So I just like trapped it in the gloves. But it could be in New York.
You had gloves.
I mean, it makes a difference. Okay, yeah. You were the most qualified person.
Touching that with your hands, and then, yeah, I don't know.
You know, that mouse was like, does he spit in these things and then rub it together?
It's like, the mouse got the raw end of the deal there.
Yeah. I was like, I need a shower after this.
I wasn't watching the game live. Obviously, there were a bunch of other games going on. So how much did the mouse run around before somebody finally like addressed it and finally you got it?
I have no idea. I had no idea what was going on. All I saw was Brendan Hines, like, we had a corner kick, and all of a sudden I see him talking to the ref, and he starts walking toward the halfway line. So I start walking, and I was like, what are you doing? Like, what? Why is the game stopped? And he was like, oh, there's a mouse on the field. I was like, what? But I guess he saw it. I have no idea. I literally had no idea. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's right there. And that's when I just picked it up. I was like, all right.
And I'm surprised it like didn't scurry and run away. That's what we were talking about it on the show.
He knows how good Brad is with
I feel safe in his hands.
I feel warmer in his arms.
Always get called the animal whisperer, so I don't know. I guess it transcends to mouse and mice and whatever.
Yeah, rodent, the rodent whisperer.
That's
my favorite part of that clip is if you ever rewatch it, the ref who's behind you, he's not getting close to that mouse, bro. He's like, no, go ahead, bro. You got this, bro. And then as soon as you pick it up, he's like, and we're back.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember after I like came back on, even the ref was clapping. I was like, why are we clapping? I just picked up a mouse.
Right. Because, I mean, the first thing it reminded me of was last year during the Philadelphia Union NYCFC with the raccoon.
Raquinho
that was running around. And I thought we were going to have another one of those on our hands. But no, because that one was like comical where they were trying to put the garbage can over it and it's running around. But this mouse was just like, no, this is where I need to be in this man's hands.
Yeah. It seemed like the mouse was coming to meet you, actually.
The pitch invader, I guess.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Damn, and he was naked too. Right. That's crazy.
We need Messi's security guard. We need to get you a version of Messi's security guard to protect you from the animals.
Oh, man. I mean, look, that was a humorous moment in the game. Obviously, the game was very difficult, right? This is something where in games like that, where the team gives up a fair amount of goals, but you were remarkable. I mean, like, again, the result could have been disastrous and really, really bad. But you arguably have one of not the best game in the world. But it's just like, man,
there's only so much you can do by yourself.
I'm curious about when you give up. Obviously, the team gives up. It's not just on one player. But when you do give up a fair amount of goals, what's the mentality like? At least for a goalkeeper, of like, yeah, you obviously don't want to give up another one, but then you really have to do a lot of work. Is it a balance of I'm gonna do everything I can to stop this from happening, or is it also like, yo, help me out? I need some help, my teammate. Yeah. Like, don't put me in this situation.
You see what you're making me look like right now?
How do you balance both of those?
I told you we're crazy. I mean, I had a hand in helping them with their second goal.
Right.
But it's one of those where, like, as a goalkeeper, you don't let mistakes get to you. Like, you can't, because everything happens so quick and things are coming so rapid that the next action is going to make a difference, whether it's going to be 5 goals, whether it's going to be 10 goals, whether it's going to be 1 goal. So, like, for me, it was just about, you know what? I messed up. I gave up a goal. I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that they don't score anymore. And then they kept scoring. And, you know, that just mantra keeps going. It's like, yeah, no more. Do everything you can. No more.
Right.
And then they keep scoring more. But yeah, I mean, it was a tough lesson to learn for us early on in the season. But for a lot of us, it's like, we need to have that mentality of, like, no matter what happens on the field, you just got to keep going. And you got to perform at your best, regardless of the result.
What is that like in those moments, right? Like, we talk a lot on the show about momentum, right? Especially, like, for the players that are, like, the outfield players. As momentum builds, it feels like the players get a little bit faster than you. And, you know, they're picking the right spots versus you. What is that like for a goalkeeper? Good moments and bad, right? Whenever momentum's either headed your way or headed against your squad. What does that feel like for you? Because you are the last line of defense. You're literally the one standing in front of goal. You know, that must be really difficult in those moments.
Yeah, you're just trying to analyze everything in front of you. You're hoping that it doesn't get to you at the end of the day. You're hoping that everybody else does their job well enough that it doesn't get to you. But I don't know, man. Like, you just kind of – it's so instinctive and it's just so reactionary at this point that you're just, like, seeing the ball, you're seeing the players, and you're just, like, going off of pure instinct, and you're just doing everything you can, throwing your body all over the place for no given reason. Waking up with bruises all over the place. But yeah, like I said, we're all crazy, love what we do, but we tell the guys all the time that they can't do what we do.
That's true.
I had asked this to Danny Pereira when he was here. But I want to talk a little bit about the Austin FC supporters, and definitely from your perspective, because I went to the inaugural game at Q2, and that was a really, really dope experience. And then you got a clean sheet. There were no goals in that game, but that was something where, even in that first game, I'm like, yo, this is dope. And obviously, we all know
the
what
support looked the
NYCFC supporter section is like, and not having your own stadium, and it feels a little bit, it's its own thing, but it's obviously very different when it's like new stadium, the supporters, that it felt like Austin FC had existed for 20 yeah. years prior. And I always
like, y'all get together and practice? Like, how y'all do all this?
So a couple, you know, I was talking to Danny about what one of my favorite chants was is the Selena chant, is what I call it. Like the El Chico del Apartamento 512. And I loved how that the Austin FC supporters were so represented when it came to just the Hispanic community, lots of different Hispanic cultures. And I really love that part. And what I want to ask you about is, especially you are on the board now of the Equality Texas Foundation, right?
Yep.
And then, and shout out to the Austin FC supporter, because there's a lot of LGBTQ IA support in the supporter mm-hmm. section as well. And just those things of just seeing that, you know, we all have kind of perceptions of what Texas is like. I know Austin is different than Texas as a whole. But to be on that foundation and to see the support that the LGBT community gets from the supporters, how has that been impactful? What do you think about that and your involvement in the foundation and everything?
Yeah, I mean, the fans have been so great from day one. And even though, like, over the past 4 years, we've only really had one deep playoff run, and they're still showing up. They're still selling out. They're still, like, rocking for 90 minutes every single game. They got watch parties when we're away. So, I mean, it's something that this club has built, just like this citywide love for what Austin FC is doing. I think it helps that we're the only professional men's professional team here. Luckily, we got a professional volleyball team here last year. So, I mean, it's growing and we're having more professional sports. But the biggest thing for us is just as players, we need to be part of the community that we play in. And because they're giving us so much on game day that we got to give back and like kind of represent them as well. And so like you said, the Cinco Uno Dos is my favorite chant that they have.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the fact that they like came up with their own chants and like made it super Austin and kind of like resonated with like local artists and all of this type of stuff, I think is so cool. It's super Austin. Just kind of the culture that has been built here. And that's why for me joining the board of Equality Texas, it was just the next step in my journey of like advocacy and just kind of standing up for the LGBTQIA plus community here in Texas. Like you said, Texas is a wild place, but Austin is, we'll call it a little blueberry in the tomato soup, I guess.
Yeah. What a beautiful way to put it.
It's a little different than coming from New York where it's a little bit more blue.
Yeah, a bundle of blueberries.
Yeah. Like the entire container.
A little tomato sauce in Staten Island, but for the most part, a little marinara down there. But the rest of it.
No, but it's been good. And just, I think it resonates with our fans just because, like you said, we have such a diverse group of fans that come out and support us. And I mean, it's just one thing that is so cool to me just to see like different nationalities, different sexual orientations, gender orientations, like all of these different things. Like we say, y'all means all, like soccer is for everybody. So anybody that shows up is going to be rooting for Austin FC. So, and that means everybody and anybody. So it's very cool to be part of this.
Doesn't matter what color you are, as long as you're green.
Black and green. I love it. I love it. No, I mean, even the TIFOs, the Austin FC support have had some really incredible TIFOs, especially in support the LGBT community. So shout out to them.
Before we go, because I know we got to let you go. You mentioned goalkeepers are crazy. What's your superstition? Like, what do you do before a game? Do you have to do the same thing? Do you have to eat the same meal?
It changes every year. But yes, like I've switched it up every year. But a couple of the superstitions that I always do, super weird, is like my socks have like the R and the L on them to tell you what foot they're supposed to go on. I have to switch them like for whatever reason. Don't know where it started. Don't know.
You're a rebel.
I don't know why, but it's like one of those things where it just feels weird now if I don't do it. And then just before each half, I like touch each post and the crossbar, and then I stand at the middle of the goal and I have like a little like me time to just kind of like self-talk, all that type of stuff. Like I said, we're crazy, do all this type of stuff where we talk to ourselves to amp yourself up and just kind of calm yourself in the moment. So those are really the only big things. But
did you see the clip of
this is what I was going to ask
of Ederson talking about his superstition? He has worn the same pair of underwear for the last 8 years. He does not.
Same pair
of underwear.
So in other words, if he were me, there'd be 39 that just
I'm hoping he washes them.
I believe he does. But even still, even if you wash them all, and even if you wash it every single time, they have to be like tattered, right? I mean, I understand some superstitions, but this one seems a little wild, even for a goalkeeper.
Yeah, that one's out there. I mean, that one's probably the crazier one that I've heard. I mean, I've heard that. Like, I've read Tim Howard's books, and he talks about kind of his superstitions and like his idiosyncrasies, that he needed like the proper pair of socks, and that if his socks weren't right, he would like throw them at the kit man and like have to get like the proper pair of socks. I don't know. Damn. I don't have anything like that. I just have the right and the left.
Look at that. You're like, I need me time. And then this guy's like, if my underwear doesn't have fleas on it,
Tim Howard,
I can't use it.
Tim Howard is Bridezilla with the kit man.
That's crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Brad Stuver, bro, seriously, it's been long overdue. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. You are, you're welcome any single time you ever want to come back here. But no, we appreciate you for definitely what you do on the pitch, but off the pitch is just remarkable, and it's nothing short of inspiring to us, and thinking of ways that we can help and contribute. And I know a lot of people are inspired by that as well. So thank you so much for joining us, and yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, man. You got still a lot of love out here in New York.
Yes, and give the best to Ashley as well.
Will do. I appreciate it. Yeah. Like I said, love seeing that y'all have killed it over the years. So love watching y'all's journey as well. So thank you,
bro. Yeah. We're just trying to, not be backups anymore.
Absolutely.
Bro. We're not trying to be.
And next time you're around, I need you to hold me like a mouse. In those warm, stinky gloves.
Stu, thanks so much, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Brad Stuver.
Bradley, crushing it, bro.
Is that his full name?
I assume so. Most Brads are Bradley.
I thought his middle name was Lee. Oh, okay, never mind. Okay. Anything can happen on the show, bro.
Is he related to Bruce?
Yeah, Bruce Lee Stuver. Everybody remembered him. Well, anyway, thank you, Brad Stuver. Thank you, Austin FC. Glad to see you guys getting a win this weekend, because that's what happens when you're on the Cooligans.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about Manchester United. Manchester United recently have become safe from relegation.
Good for them.
It is April 20th when that was released, April 19th. A little late in the season to be told you're sort of safe from relegation, but we know the struggles they've had this year, bringing in Amorim, and it hasn't gone smoothly. But there's these little hopes, these little things that are happening that give you some hope. In particular, they have a pretty good run so far in Europa. Mm. They're in the semifinals against Atletico Bilbao. They are kind of slated to be in the final at the very least, potentially against Tottenham.
Sure.
Do you think that these little bits of just like hope, these little things that are happening are giving you some hope, especially the match against Lyon, are giving you hope if you are a Manchester United fan that maybe next season will be better off, that Amorim was the right choice?
I guess I think if you're a rational United fan, the answer should be no.
Okay.
That these little moments of like, of positivity and glimmer, because they shouldn't be down to Lyon when they're up a man and give up two goals and then need three goals scored in whatever 8 minutes to win a game. Right. Yes, it makes for lovely television and it's a great story, but why are you in that position at all?
Right.
So,
but let's say this wasn't Manchester United. Remove that badge. We're talking about a scrappy team that's now playing a bunch
of
above their weight.
Everton having this season having these moments.
Parades.
I'm like, this is we have a parade for getting to the semifinal.
Right.
This is an amazing story.
You have a parade for being able to plan a parade. But I think what you're talking about is a team that normally you would have say, even if we were down a man, the footballing world, the universe is against us. So to even be able to battle that, even being up a man, even being able to win a big match is a huge deal. This is Manchester United. They should be a man down and be the team winning. You know what I mean? Coming back to win from behind.
Right.
That's the lure, the aura around this team. And we've gotten to the point where that aura doesn't really exist anymore. So are these little glimmers of hope? Is Amorim the right guy to carry you forward if you are a Manchester United fan or if you're Manchester United's front office? I think there's some signs that potentially, I still think he needs to be able to get his own players. So I don't know how much money there is. There's so much that needs to be done. There's not enough people to fire if you're just Sir Jim Ratcliffe. I don't know where the money's going to come from, but you have to back this guy, right? You didn't pay $10 million to free him from his Sporting Club contract to not at least give him an entire offseason, an entire transfer window.
He's not in any situation where he's like at risk to be sacked or anything.
Yeah, but the question becomes like, can you confidently back someone? Are you willing to say, I'm going to let you decide what happens with this $200 million? It's tough.
Yeah, it is tough, and that is the job. That's the job for the board. That's the job for Ratcliffe. That's a job. That's the job that Amorim is hired.
We're
to
talking
do.
About the same board that is feeding their staff like scraps from the suites.
Okay, the players are kicking off their crumbs on the table and then giving that to them.
And the staff is underneath holding their hands out. It's some real Oliver twist.
Oliver twist.
So Jim Ratcliffe might have some more.
So this puts them I was obsessively watching all the reactions to the Lyon game, watching Flex, all the Manchester United streamers.
It reminded me of the 7-5 Arsenal versus Reading. This is a match that you'll be talking about forever,
right? And the the moment the penalty is scored by Lacazette in extra time, and the complete like.
Deflated.
Just, I mean, it was already difficult and already.
How much emotions do you have left to give this season?
And then, the tying goal from Harry Maguire scored the game-winning goal. He's like basically playing striker. And when you look at, look at the score sheet of all the players that scored, and it was none of the attacking three. From Manchester United, Hoyland is just. I mean, we talk about money. They spent $75 million on him, and what'd you get? Yeah,
also he had only scored 9 goals at Atalanta. I don't know why you paid that much for that guy.
It's surreal.
You're like, this will be our early.
But nobody seems to be stepping up. There isn't anybody they can just send the ball up forward to, and they feel like sort of confident about.
Who was it? I think it was Harry Redknapp said on a podcast a long time ago. He's like, I'd put Harry Maguire in a striker. He's like, he's a big lad. You can literally send balls at his forehead
This was truly one of the greatest matches I think a lot of people have ever seen. Also at Old Trafford, there were so many people after the game, like man on the street, they were like, that's the greatest match of football I have ever seen in my life. But what did it take for you to say that? It took the absolute, like you were in the mud. You were just completely broken. You're like, after Lacazette scores that, we're like, we're done. We're having a absolute Premier League season.
Like, is that a player whose Premier League career was over 5 years ago?
And then, he makes his penalty, and it's really, they have nothing left. And then, there's a penalty called. Casemiro was the man of the match for that extra time because he got the two assists. And it's why does it need, that's all I'm saying, why does it need to get to that? Why can't you just be like, we beat them 4-0, and that was the greatest match of football I've ever seen. We just
because it's Manchester United and it's 2025.
And then so that's what you're looking for, any little piece of anything to cling some hope to. Who are they playing? They're playing Bilbao in the semifinal. You're not, Bilbao's like actually pretty good.
You're gonna get cooked.
Away,
you're gonna get cooked.
It's no joke playing over there. So I was watching the game, I'm like, all right, this is entertaining. I cannot believe they made this comeback. But the fact that this is what it came to, and then in the Premier League, they end up losing 1-0 to Wolves off an amazing free kick and stuff like that. But they played 120 minutes. The Europa League game.
Wolves under Vitor Pereira is no joke.
Sure. But you would, again, you would expect a second, even not a reserve team of Manchester United player, but the bench should be good enough to at least draw Wolves.
Manchester United.
I mean, that's all I'm saying. It's just like, again, maybe we're stuck in the past and we just, our expectations are not even realistic.
I don't even know if it's that we're stuck in the past. I just think it's so wild that even this long into a season where it's pretty much over,
mm-hmm.
where we're still saying, like, can Manchester United really be this bad? It's the aura. We're used to Fergie time. We're used to players, you know, the team gets extra time. As soon as some random, you know, regen walks in, you're like, oh, now this guy, I don't know where this guy's going to score against you. And that's generally what happens, because it was the aura of they were unbeatable. Even until the final whistle, you didn't believe you beat them.
Yeah.
This team is the exact opposite. For them to have a moment where they sort of harken back to that, you know, where they felt that way against the Lyon team, which you should be beating.
Yeah.
But for a team like, for this team to be able to go back to that and feel like that little bit of the past is still with them, must feel really good if you're a Manchester United fan.
Sure.
Which is why I think maybe these little glimpses are giving you hope for the future. And I hope a coach like Amorim gets more time, because the idea of, like, you need to step right in and be a superstar right away and everything go right when this wasn't the team of your choosing is impossible. And you started to see the fans kind of turn against them a little bit.
Yeah.
So I hope that this gives them time. Same thing was happening to Arteta. And now you can see what's happening with Arteta. And I think people are really trustful of the plan.
Yeah.
Hopefully they do that with Amorim.
Maybe. I think he gets more time. I'm not optimistic. I still think we see the same team next season. I don't think it's going to change that much. He's going to bring in a couple players.
That depends on the offseason they have.
Yeah. We'll see. But I'm not expecting too much different. A lot has to be done for that club. All right. Let's wrap it up there. Shout out again to Brad Stuver for hanging out with us.
What a gem.
We always appreciate it. Yeah. Go show him some love, you know, in the comments. Show some positivity. I know he'll appreciate that.
Or if you sit behind him in the stadium, tell him I said what's up.
tell him like, yo, Stu, you were great on the Cooligans. Yeah. Yo, somebody in the supporters, I know a couple people in Austin listen. Huh? Say something.
Let him know. Maybe make a chant about it.
Imagine they make a chant, a Cooligans
chant. Great on the Cooligans. Brad Stewart's great on the Cooligans. Great on the Cooligans.
I love it.
Brad Stewart's great on the Cooligans.
I love it.
Great on the Cooligans.
So, yeah. You
I did it for you. All you have to do is sing it now.
All right. So, let the supporters know. We got a new chant coming in. Make sure you follow us on all the socials if you have not subscribed to us on YouTube. Hit the like button if you have not yet. You're literally a crazy person if you have not hit the like button yet. And
I agree.
Okay. I mean, I hate to
clinically,
I hate to attack your mental health, but
I think at this point it's only fair.
Okay. We all,
it's one button. It's right there. It's a little
nobody's
thumbs up.
Canceling me for that statement.
No.
Okay.
Not
everybody,
at all.
Everybody agrees with
me. I want to remind everyone the thoughts of Christian Blanco are just that of Christian Blanco.
Just in case.
Yeah. If you felt that was bad, hit the like button. If you didn't mind it, hit the like button.
So, we'll be back on Thursday. We have an interview on Thursday.
Yes.
A really fun episode. We're going to be joined by comedian Alex Falcone.
Ooh.
And if you don't know,
you know him. Is that a scam yep?
If he pop up on your TikTok FYP or
and
maybe
on Instagram.
Instagram
Reels?
Yeah, but Alex Falcone, he has a series called Is It a Scam Yep? And it's exactly what it sounds like. And
I still get fooled every time.
You think?
I'm like, maybe this time won't be a scam.
But no, he's a great comedian, and he has a really good series on.
Doing a tour. Stopped by when he was in New York.
Exactly.
That's what we want to be. We want to be a revolving door for footy fans.
Exactly. Right? It'll be a fun and interesting episode. We cover a lot of fun stuff with him. So make sure you be on the lookout for that. All right. We'll see you on Thursday.
That's right.
Enjoy your next 2 days. Hopefully, there's a couple of matches during the week.
There's a bunch
week.
Of stuff happening.
All right, I hope your teams lose, as always.
How about this? In the comments, over under on when Carter gets out of jury duty.
Please, hopefully he's here by Thursday.
No, we might not.
Okay, say bye, Amin.
Bye.
See you guys.